Is there a Republican strategy in swing states, including Wisconsin, to restrict voting rights? The New York Times reported on Saturday on a pattern of new voting restrictions in Republican-controlled swing states, from voter ID legislation to shortened early voting hours. And the Democratic National Committee held a conference call with media to respond to the effort. We will talk about this effort, and we will welcome your reactions and questions for our guest. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, April 1st, and it is Spring Election Day in Wisconsin. Do you think that the recent changes to election laws in Wisconsin, like the restrictions on in-person absentee voting or early voting, or the voter ID law that is before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, do you think that changes like this are warranted, are necessary for election fairness or to prevent voter fraud? Or do you, like our guest, think this is a political effort by the GOP to suppress mainly Democratic voters from going to the polls? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Brendan Fisher, General Counsel for the Center for Media and Democracy. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Well, what is your reaction to this, the New York Times report on Saturday that says that this effort is going on in eight swing states?
Yeah, I think the New York Times article is great, and it really captured this cynical effort to make it harder to vote for disfavored populations or for populations that that tend to vote for Democrats. You've seen similar legislation pushed by Republicans in Wisconsin and Ohio and North Carolina and other states. And it's been fairly similar legislation with similar justifications and a similar impact. What it really comes down to is that it might be politically useful to choose who can access the ballot box, but it's a basic tenet of democracy that voters get to choose their politicians, not the other way around. And that seems to be what Republicans in these swing states are doing. They're trying to choose who can vote. They're trying to choose. They're trying to choose who can access the ballot box. And our democracy is premised on everybody being able to vote. People have fought for years. Many people actually died fighting for their ability to exercise their right to the franchise. There's no real problem that these laws are confronting. There's no statistically significant evidence of voter fraud. There was no significant problem with there's no significant problem of non-uniformity that these laws are going to prevent. What these laws really do is just make it harder for some people to exercise their fundamental right as a citizen in a democracy.
Yeah. Well, let's talk first about the bill that Governor Walker recently signed that would limit the early voting, the in-person absentee voting. It would not allow this to happen on weekends, which is currently happening in bigger cities like Madison and Milwaukee. Why do you say that this is, why is this going to make it harder for anyone to vote?
Sure. So the cutback on early voting is actually the second round of cutbacks on early voting. So, and the legislation is aimed at making it harder to vote for Wisconsin's urban residents in Milwaukee and in Madison, both of which are Democratic strongholds. These are cities whose polling places have stayed open late and stayed open on weekends to accommodate the city's large population. So, in 2008. President Obama won Wisconsin by 14 points, thanks in part to an aggressive vote early campaign where one in five voters in Wisconsin cast absentee ballots in person at their county clerk's office. They voted early. After Republicans took control of the legislature in 2010, they cut the number of days and weekends for voting early in half from 1 month before the election to just 2 weeks. So in the 2012 election, you still saw a sizable number of people vote early. Around 390,000 people voted through in-person absentee ballots at their clerk's offices, and Obama again won the state by a sizable margin. So now, with this latest bill, early voting has been cut again. So under the bill that Governor Walker signed, he vetoed a portion of the bill that limited early voting to 45 hours per week. But he kept in place the weekend ban. So voters are no longer going to be able to vote on the weekend, and that's going to disproportionately affect a city like Milwaukee, which had to stay open late to accommodate the large number of voters. There's another rule which has remained intact, requiring that if county clerk's offices are going to stay open to accommodate early voters, they can only have one location within the entire county. So for a city like Nina or Sparta, that's not a big issue. There's not that many people who are going to be showing up to vote early. But in Milwaukee, to have one county clerk's office open to accommodate the hundreds of thousands of people in the city, that's a major burden. It's going to be very difficult for a city of Milwaukee to accommodate all the potential voters within one office and within the circumscribed period that they now have to operate. I think the estimate that I've heard is that to handle the number of early voters who showed up in 2012 under these new rules, Milwaukee would have 11 seconds to process each ballot under the new law.
How do you respond to the Republican argument that this change was needed because it wasn't fair that Madison and Milwaukee had the staff to stay open on weekends for early voting or to staff that voting, and that's not the case in smaller communities across the state?
Yeah, and I alluded to it in what I just said. I mean, the reason that larger cities need longer hours is simple. It's because they have more people to accommodate. And what makes this worse is this rule that allows only one polling place for early voting in each municipality. That rule still stands, and it's unfair to Milwaukee voters who have to wait in long lines. And if we want to talk about uniformity, I'd say we should reverse the equation. So why don't we push for uniformity in wait time so that people in Milwaukee don't have to wait longer to vote than people in Nina or in Sparta? There's fewer people in rural communities, and they almost never have to stand in line nearly as long as people in urban areas like Milwaukee. And early voting, the longer period of early voting helped remedy that. It kept lines from becoming excessively long. Something else I should mention, we saw some really long lines in 2012 around the country. There was a bipartisan election commission formed by the president after the 2012 election. They estimated that 5 million people had to wait longer than an hour to vote. Some voters waited as long as 6 hours. You really saw that in Florida, where there were these excessively long lines where people had to wait in line all day just for their ability to cast a vote, participate in democracy. Wisconsin, we didn't really see those problems. We saw some lines, but we didn't see anything like what you saw in Florida. And in part, that's because we had this extended period of early voting. And the president's bipartisan commission, one of the recommendations in order to reduce long lines is by expanding the period for voting before Election Day. And some states are doing this. Some states are moving forward with efforts to expand early voting. And Wisconsin, as well as other states like swing states like Ohio and North Carolina, we're going the other direction. We're narrowing early voting, which is inevitably going to lead to longer lines, which is its own form of voter suppression. People are not going to, if people see long lines on Election Day, they're not going to vote. A certain number of people are just not going to have the time to wait in line all day in order to exercise their most basic right in a democracy.
We are talking about recent changes to voting laws, not only in Wisconsin, but in other states controlled by Republicans. And we're wondering why this is happening, and we are welcoming your thoughts and questions and reactions for our guest, Brendan Fisher, General Counsel for the Center for Media and Democracy. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, April 1st, Spring Election Day in Wisconsin. The New York Times reported on Saturday on a pattern of new voting restrictions in Republican-controlled swing states, including Wisconsin, from voter ID legislation to shortened early voting hours and more. We're talking with a guest who says that these changes, these laws, new laws, are unnecessary and will suppress mainly Democratic voters. And we're wondering what you think, what questions you have. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. The DNC also held a news conference yesterday, a conference call to discuss these changes and the efforts. A spokesperson for the DNC called it crass. It is purely political. It is undemocratic. What do you think? We are talking with Brendan Fisher, General Counsel for the Center for Media and Democracy. And what do you think, Brendan Fisher, the DNC is doing with holding this press conference, trying to rile people up about the changes?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that they have more than one. I'd say there's at least two motivations. I mean, one is obviously they want to stick a pin in the eye of the Republicans. They want to call attention to these really, really extreme measures. But this should not necessarily be a partisan issue. I mean, for many years, access to the ballot box and voting rights, it should be something that everybody has supported. It's something that Republicans and Democrats have supported. I mean, that's what a democracy is. It's the one day out of the year or out of every few years when, you know, the billionaire, the voice of the billionaire counts just as much as the voice of the person who has very little. You know, this is what our democracy and our country is built on, the ability for individuals to cast a vote for the elected official of their choosing, and to not have burdens standing in their way. And you know, it's not necessarily a partisan issue, or it shouldn't be. I'm really impressed by Dale Schultz, the Republican legislator from Wisconsin, who's retiring and not going out quietly. He's really called out his party for these efforts. He recently said, I'm quoting from here, that it's just sad when a political party has so lost faith in its ideas that it's pouring all of its energy into election mechanics. We should be pitching as political parties our ideas for improving things in the future rather than mucking around in the mechanics and making it more confrontational at voting sites and trying to suppress the vote. And I think that's really accurate. You know, like I said before, you know, it might be politically useful to choose who can access the ballot box, but it's a basic tenet of democracy that voters get to choose their politicians, not the other way around.
By the way, we will have Senator Dale Schultz on the program on Thursday. Both Senator Schultz and Senator Bob Jauch, both retiring from the state Senate, will be joining us in our 7 o'clock hour on Thursday. Mike in Sheboygan is with us. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Joy. I just cast my vote at one of the small communities in the state of Wisconsin that the so-called Republicans are trying to protect, and there were 8 volunteers and 1 person voting, so I don't see this as an argument at all. In fact, I would call it a bald-faced lie, because I consider this an attempt to bring Jim Crow back. And I'm embarrassed to say that the Southern conservative slave owners that basically held on to Jim Crow are influencing Wisconsin to the point where they are now taking what was once the most progressive state in the Union and encouraging voters. They're trying to discourage blacks from voting like they did 50 years ago, which is also ironic because it was 50 years ago this year that the Voting Rights Act was passed. But my main question is, it's not about uniformity. Canada has the same conservative attempt to restrict voting, and Quebec and some of the other provinces. So when there's, you know, when there's an argument about uniformity, it's a bald-faced lie, and I'm embarrassed to say that Wisconsin conservatives, and it's not the Republican Party, it's the conservative branch of the Republican Party that is doing this. So I don't think we should paint the brush and say Republicans, because Dale Schultz is one of those progressive Republicans who thinks democracy matters more than basically bringing Jim Crow back. And I'm ashamed that our governor would sign such a bill. And those are my comments.
Thanks very much. Do you have a reaction, Brendan?
Yeah, I mean, I think he touched on a few really important things. I mean, one is that Wisconsin has long had some really progressive traditions when it comes to elections and election administration. We've been ahead of the curve for a long time. Early voting is one example. This is something where we've long had early voting. We've long successfully had early voting with basically no problems. Earlier this year, the Presidential Election Commission recommended that more states adopt early voting, but we already had it. Also, same-day registration. That's also an initiative that we adopted back in the 1970s in order to make it easier for people to access the ballot box. More states are now catching up because it just makes sense. It's a great idea. But with that too, we seem to be moving backwards. We seem to be adopting the strategies of Southern states. And these are cynical efforts. These are not efforts that are motivated by a desire to expand democracy or improve outcomes for Wisconsin residents. These are cynical efforts to improve partisan gain, to make partisan gain. And the justifications just don't stand up. So with voter ID, the justifications were that voter fraud is rampant, that voter fraud is affecting the outcome of Wisconsin elections, and the facts don't back that up. There's been bipartisan efforts to look into and identify and prosecute voter fraud, and voter fraud happens at a rate of around 1/1,000% of the overall electorate. That was the justification for voter ID. And now we're coming. Now the latest justification is uniformity, which, as we've discussed, just as often does not stand up to scrutiny. We don't have the solutions that work for a small community in northern Wisconsin. Don't necessarily work for a community like Milwaukee, which has so many more people to accommodate. So I mean, if we just look at this in a fair manner and look at the reported problems that these voting laws are being presented as a solution to, you see that these are really just a cynical and ugly partisan effort that I don't think anybody should really stand for.
Yeah, the DNC is characterizing these changes as a coordinated attack or campaign or strategy by the GOP. Is there any evidence that this is coordinated?
Well, I mean, I think it's more than a coincidence that this is all happening at the same time and all happening with the same justification. So Republicans in North Carolina and Ohio also use this claim of uniformity as to justify these new restrictions. And they also made some nod to the overburdened poll workers, but you know, these claims just don't really stand up to scrutiny. But the fact that that Republicans in multiple states are pushing the same laws at the same time using the same justifications really does suggest that there is coordination. So with this particular set of laws, I don't know. I wouldn't be able to say exactly where it came from. But with voter ID, which spread across the country in 2011 and 2012, that we can tie back more closely to ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. That's a group that we at the Center for Media and Democracy have been tracking for a few years now at our website, alecexposed.org. And you saw after the 2010 Republican surge gave Republicans new majority in state houses and governor's mansions across the country, you saw these voter ID bills spread across the country. They were introduced in 34 states and became law in 8 states, including Wisconsin. And that was something that you can very clearly tie back to ALEC. And one of ALEC's founders, I think this is a really revealing quote. One of ALEC's founders was a Racine native, a guy named Paul Weyrich. He famously said, "I don't want everybody to vote. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the election quite candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down."
Let me hold you there, because we have news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio next, and then we will continue talking about recent changes to election and voting laws in Wisconsin and elsewhere. It is spring election day in Wisconsin, and we are discussing recent changes and proposed changes to election laws that Republicans say are needed to ensure fairness on election day or to prevent voter fraud on election day, but critics and Democrats say are unnecessary and, frankly, will suppress the vote in Wisconsin and elsewhere. And we're wondering what you think. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about this issue as the New York Times reported this weekend on a pattern of new voting restrictions in Republican-controlled swing states, from voter ID legislation to shortened early voting hours. We are talking with a guest who also says these laws are unnecessary and will suppress the Democratic vote, ultimately benefit Republican candidates. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you have a question or a view on this. Our guest is Brendan Fisher, General Counsel for the Center for Media and Democracy. And our next caller is Victor in Oconomowoc. Hello, Victor.
Good morning, Ms. Cardine, Mr. Fisher. How are you this morning?
Good. What do you think, Victor?
Well, I think it's appropriate you're talking about this on April Fool's Day because the Republicans are trying to make fools of all of us. Listen, the incentive structure behind voter fraud is what reveals how unnecessary it is. Say I commit voter fraud. Say I walk in with a fake ID and get to vote. What have I done? I've changed one vote. What is the possible penalty for my discovery? I would pay a hefty fine, and I would go to jail. The incentive structure to commit voter fraud is so strong, there's no payoff. It is simply a means to suppress. Yeah, I think it's a racist effort. I also think it reveals the condescension of the Republicans against those people who are either minority or who are, quote-unquote, undeserving of being, you know, able to vote. That's my comment, and I'll listen to your guest's response on the air. Thank you and good morning.
All right. Thank you very much. Well, your response, Brendan, to that, but the Republicans say one fraudulent vote is one fraudulent vote too many.
Yeah. Yeah, he does raise a good point. I mean, particularly with voter ID laws, the only type of fraud that requiring an ID at the polls would prevent is in-person fraud, a person voting under somebody else's name or casting more than one ballot. And as your caller said, I mean, this is a really stupid way to try and sway the outcome of an election. You as an individual would only be able to make one or two extra votes. You'd have to organize a large, to actually sway the outcome of an election,
you'd have to organize a large number of people to go in, knowing who they are, who they're going to pretend to be, and they're going to have to find some way to calculate how they're going to cast their ballots. And really, the only way you could do that is if you have the participation of some sort of election administrator or polling place official. And again, I mean, as I mentioned before, this is something that Republican and Democratic prosecutors have looked into and found such a small percentage of double votes. I think there was one prosecution of a person who voted twice in the 2008 elections. So, in response to the claim about, you know, one fraudulent vote being too many, I think we have to look at this on balance. So on balance, with voter ID, there's 300,000 people in the state who don't have the forms of ID required under the law. So if you balance that against one, maybe two fraudulent votes in each election, the cost of disenfranchising 300,000 people is not outweighed by the benefits of stopping the statistically insignificant problem of voter fraud. I don't even want to call it a problem. The statistically insignificant incidence of voter fraud. When you balance the interests, it's clear that these laws don't come out in any sort of positive way. One other thing that he did mention, and which is running under a lot of this is the issue of race. I mean, in many ways, these voter fraud allegations, which are unfounded, but they're allegations, are almost always directed at urban areas. The claims of voter fraud usually come from low-income communities of color. The claims of voter fraud conjure an image of an urban African-American man or woman. And this is a racist dog whistle. It sounds racially neutral, but it's a signal to a particular audience. It can rally the troops. It can rally the conservative base. It can drive turnout for Republicans. But in the end, it's a cynical way to advance a partisan agenda, and it turns Americans against each other.
Todd in Green Bay is with us next. Hello, Todd.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guest. A couple of things. One of the things that happens is that this is treated as though it was just a straight Republican action. It's not treated as though this is a reaction to anything. And I know your guest is fond of saying there's no real problem there. But I think John Fund of the Wall Street Journal wrote an entire book just on the voter fraud that's taken place in Milwaukee alone. If you look at what happens, unfortunately, like one of the callers said earlier, you know, if you have one fraudulent vote, so what? You've taken away one other person's vote by voting fraudulently. But if enough people start doing that, and people are aware that's the way that it's looked at, and they're also aware, though, that the real problem becomes after the election, the real problem doesn't happen until after the election, because the person's already in office. You never have an election reversed on fraudulent votes, on charges of fraudulent votes. But the final point is that I think that it's a shame, and I think your guest, by saying that it's racist to allow people to target people, or if, as he says, in urban areas, because they are, you know, they're somehow incapable of going out and getting an ID. I can't think of anything that's more racist than your guest's view.
Reaction to that, Brendan?
Sure. Well, I guess I see two claims there. One is this John Fund book talking about voter fraud in Milwaukee. I mean, I think John Fund has been one of the most prominent voices out there perpetuating this myth of voter fraud. Like I've mentioned many times, there have been bipartisan investigations into voter fraud in Wisconsin, and have identified just a handful of cases, a very, very small number of cases. There was a report by a unit of the Milwaukee Police Department that raised a lot of allegations of voter fraud, which was embraced by Republicans across the country, including John Fund. He's repeatedly pointed to this 2004 report, but the report has been basically entirely discredited. It was even Milwaukee's police chief at the time, Edward Flynn, disregarded the report. It was a unauthorized report, and the author made a lot of recommendations that weren't based in law. The author of the report claimed that there were more ballots cast in Milwaukee than individuals processed, but the discrepancy was resolved. It was attributed to administrative error. There's a long list of policy recommendations that this report author made that were really unfounded, both in law and in fact. In response to this claim that it's somehow racist to point out that people don't have ID in the state, or that it's racist to say that they can't get ID, I think we just have to look at the facts. There's 300,000 people in the state who don't have the forms of ID required under the law. That's not disputed. The voter ID legislation has been challenged in multiple courts, and the state hasn't really disputed that there's hundreds of thousands of people in the state that don't have ID. That's just a fact. And maybe everybody that the caller knows has ID, and maybe it was never difficult for them to obtain one. But I mean, you have to step outside of your immediate surroundings sometimes and realize that not everybody has the same advantages and privileges that you do. Some people live in an urban area and they don't need to drive; they can rely on public transport, and they've never needed an ID. Other people were born in a rural area and never had a birth certificate and are unable to get one and are unable to track it down, and therefore can't get the ID required under the law. There's also people who were recently, women who were recently married or recently divorced, and the name on their ID does not match the name on their voter registration. There's a long list of reasons that people don't have the ID required under the law. And again, when you look at it on balance, the cost of disenfranchising potentially hundreds of thousands of people are not outweighed by the actual factual incidence of voter fraud that it's intended to prevent.
We have just a minute or so before I need to take a break, but since we're talking about the voter ID law and legal challenges, it's before the state Supreme Court right now, Wisconsin's new law. Give us your prediction as to whether the Wisconsin Supreme Court will uphold or strike down our voter ID law.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's definitely an interesting challenge. It's brought under the state constitution, which includes express protections for voting rights, and an appellate court did decide that the voter ID law does violate the state constitution. We do have a very conservative state Supreme Court. It's nominated, it's nominated by conservative justices. But two of those conservative justices did voice concerns during oral arguments about the administrative and financial hurdles to getting an ID. So even though there's provisions for a free ID under the law, there's still a lot of burdens and costs associated with actually getting that supposedly free ID. So it's difficult to know exactly what's going to happen.
Well, I'll leave that there for now. We will continue talking with Brendan Fisher, General Counsel for the Center for Media and Democracy, talking about the effort that is happening in 8 Republican-controlled swing states, including Wisconsin, where the state legislatures are changing voting laws or restricting access to voting. And we're wondering why this is. We're welcoming your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Support for today's programming on Wisconsin Public Radio is made possible in part by day sponsor Lenore Coe, in honor of the important work of the Wisconsin-based Raptor Education Group, Incorporated.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about voting restrictions that are taking place in a number of states, including Wisconsin. Talking with Brendan Fisher, who is the general counsel for the Center for Media and Democracy, and welcoming your input, your questions, and your reactions. Do you think that these changes, like voter ID, like restrictions on early voting, are these necessary to ensure fair elections, or are they unwarranted and will they suppress mainly Democratic voters, as the Democratic Party is insisting? Our next caller is John in Rhinelander. Hello, John.
Hi. There is actually corruption and manipulation going on in voting, and it's done in the following way. They move voting machines from areas that are in the inner city that have a heavy vote, and they push the voting lines out to 5 or 6 or 7 hours. That's a commonly known practice. Now, there may be a cure for this. Could you have people with absentee ballots there that could give the ballots to the people that are simply turned away because they've got to go back to work?
They could get it. All right. What about that, Brendan?
Yeah, I mean, I think really what he's saying is that long lines can be their own form of voter suppression. When a lot of people don't have the time to stand in line for an hour, 2 hours, or 3 hours on election day, and that there were hundreds of thousands of people who didn't vote at all across the country in 2012 because the lines were so long. And one of the ways that you can resolve this, one of the ways you can reduce long lines, is through early voting, which is something that we're actually cutting. We're going the other direction, which is almost certainly going to result in longer lines on election day for these midterm elections, which is inevitably going to turn a certain number of people away who just won't have the time to wait in order to cast their ballot.
Jeff in Lone Rock emails, right now, he says, there are many undocumented people who vote in this country, especially in Madison and Milwaukee. Right now, all they need to do is prove they are living here, not that they are legal citizens. An ID requirement will eliminate the majority of these voters.
Yeah, I don't think there's any evidence of undocumented people. I mean, there's very little evidence of undocumented people voting. It's not happening on a regular basis. And also, I mean, people who are undocumented are, for the most part, living in constant fear of deportation, of having to get sent back to the country where they came from. Arriving in the U.S. is no easy feat. It costs thousands of dollars. You have to trek across the desert. It's a dangerous and long path and ordeal, and I can't think that anybody is going to put that at risk, is going to risk having to go through all of that again or getting sent back to the country that they left just so they can cast one vote in an American election.
Dennis in Oconomowoc is next. Hello, Dennis.
Good morning, Joy. Joy, I've been listening to this argument for a long time, and it really hasn't changed. Those on the left say there's no fraud or very little fraud. Those on the right says, you know, it's rampant. And as usual, I think it's probably somewhere in between. But I think the bigger issue, rather than debating how much fraud there is or isn't, I think the bigger issue is there's a perceived credibility problem with our voting system. And the only way to address that is to really assure that everyone voting should be voting. So I don't know why we have this debate about the quantity of fraud one way or another. It's really more of a perceived credibility. And if the credibility of our voting system erodes, then much worse things happen down the road. That's it. Thanks.
So we need voter ID to preserve the credibility of the voting process, Brendan?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting, he raises an interesting point. I mean, there is clearly this back and forth between how much fraud exists. And I mean, I think that there's a fair amount of evidence out there that indicates that fraud is very rare. As I alluded to before, these raising allegations of fraud, raising the specter of voter fraud, is a tactic. I don't really think that Rentz Priebus thinks that voter fraud amounts for makes a difference of 1 or 2 percentage points in Wisconsin elections, but he says it. He repeats that claim because it's politically useful. And I think that there's, you know, there have been a lot of people who've been raising the specter of voter fraud and calling into question the integrity of our election system, and they're doing it in a way that's cynical and it's unfounded. You know, in elections across the world, this is a tried and true tactic. I was just observing the elections in El Salvador, and the Conservative Party there clearly lost the elections, but they also raised the specter of voter fraud. They raised the specter that voters were being shipped across the border and casting ballots illegally. There was no evidence whatsoever, but it provides comfort to your base. Instead of accepting that your party lost on this battlefield of ideas, you can claim that your side lost because of some wrongdoing on the other side. You know, there's no reason to question the integrity of American elections. There's things that we can do to make things better. But risking disenfranchising hundreds of thousands of people in the state, because some people have been raising unfounded claims about the integrity of our elections is just not justified. You know, and something else too. I mean, if they're really concerned about making sure everybody is who they say they are, we can build in a trigger warrant, a trigger to these laws. We can require that everybody in the state get an ID before voter ID laws get into effect. But that's not something that's ever really been raised, because these laws depend on a lot of people not having IDs.
Yeah. Well, we have just a minute to go here. What do you think the future is going to bring? Do you just see this trend continuing in states controlled by the Republican Party?
Well, I think there've been some positive developments in the last few years in Nebraska, which is a red state. The state legislature unanimously approved a bill to register and vote online. Arizona and Kansas also do online registration. Massachusetts just passed a bill to allow early in-person and early voting. And you're seeing, on the federal level, you're seeing some bipartisan support for amendments to the Voting Rights Act. So, I mean, I don't think that this is anything is carved in stone. I think we're going to see a lot of back and forth. But I really hope that in the end, we're going to err on the side of expanding democracy, expanding access to the franchise, rather than limiting it.
We'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Brendan Fisher is General Counsel for the Center for Media and Democracy. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.